in Iowa a couple of years ago?
Right off, I don't recall anything. Maybe.
Yes, it was an Omni magazine.
That's a heck of a way to get out of doing your show.
That's right. My mother is from that city, and she mentioned to me in 1912 that she saw a cigar-shaped UFO fly over that city. There's a lot of Indian mounds. I wonder if, you know, there's not too much said about the American Indians here in the U.S. Mm-hmm. and their contact with UFOs. Do you have any information?
I don't have a great deal of knowledge in that.
Well, the people that I know that are rather conversant with the oral history, particularly of the Navajo and the Apache, there is an enormous amount of information that comes from there about the relationship between the Indian and their space brothers. And most of the time, they will pinpoint the home of the space brothers as being Pleiades.
So that's... do they say that they're descended from the space people? Or
yes,
are they...
yes, they say they're direct descendants, and that one of these days, they'll go back home to Pleiades. This is a part of that Indian lore.
Hmm. That's interesting. I didn't hear that part about it, that I've heard about the...
You haven't been listening to this show long enough.
Well...
We've gone into this a number of times, yeah.
I wonder if there's any way of... I've seen plans for UFO detectors. Do they really work? Do you know anything about them?
They should. There's various designs. One of the best, better ones utilizes a CRT tube. And
what happens? Does it light up or does it...
The magnetic interference will... change the direction of the beam and trigger a sensor sound an alarm. This will just tell you that something magnetic is disturbing your equipment. And you can get ready with the camera, recorder, and what have you.
One of the leading men in that field, his name escapes me, he was a guest on the show here a couple of years ago, is down in Missouri. Who was in the physics department at one of the universities. I want to say the University of Missouri, but I don't think so.
Jan Eric Herr down in San Diego builds and sells some of these very sophisticated detectors. Jan Eric Herr.
Herr.
San Diego.
We'll try to find Jan's address for you, and if you want to contact him about getting a detector, which will just detects a disturbance in the magnetic lines of force.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And that may be anything, but it may be a UFO.
Yeah.
It's a start.
It's a start.
Yeah.
Get you in the right direction.
Thank you very much.
Okay, Edson, thank you very much. And we have Eve on the line. Hello, Eve.
Hello. Before I ask, before I make my skeptic remark.
A skeptic.
A skeptic, yes. Or a partially skeptic, perhaps.
Mm.
Can I ask Mr. Herrera, is that the name correct?
Yes.
Mr. Herrera, do you believe in there are clones being made by our government?
Clones?
Clones, you know.
I don't have any information on that.
Well, I mean, you've heard about that, haven't you? They're making
human clone?
Yes, human clone.
No, I haven't.
Well, I heard this 20 years ago or 10 years ago, and that's another reason why I'm so skeptical. But Mr. Bill Jennings, right?
Right.
Mr. Jennings, the reason I'm a skeptic is, first of all this information about the UFOs is only coming in to us, what, since 1940, you said, 1930?
47.
47. What? Where were the UFOs before this?
They were there.
They were there.
They were there.
The big interest peaked in 47.
But why 47?
My mother saw one long before that. They were around.
Well, anyway, I'm curious, why 47? And the other thing, Mr.
Let us answer that question.
Oh, I'm sorry. I can't hear you too well.
Why 47?
There was a fascinating sighting over Mount Rainier.
Mm-hmm.
And
by Mr. Arnold.
Kenneth Arnold. And that really sparked the imaginations.
And one of the reasons for it probably was, if you remember, that was just on the heels of a very significant event in Earth evolution. We decided that we knew how to blow ourselves to a jillion pieces and exploded some atomic bombs.
And our television waves were going out into outer space at that time.
And you have to remember, when an atomic bomb explodes, as we had exploded three at that time, and we're in the process of testing others, you send out an E-field, which is can go, you know, throughout the cosmos, and that's a signature to somebody that, uh-oh, there's bad business going on over there. Wish we'd go check it out.
Can I make replies to these things?
Yeah, you can.
But I
tell you what, you're going to have to wait because we're just a little behind time. We've got to stop for newscast. You want to hang on here?
Sure, I'd love to. Would you let me?
Sure.
Thank you.
We'll be right back.
I'm the first caller.
I'm Bill Jenkins. It's Open Mind. Jenkins, this Saturday night, we're talking the UFO. And with me, John D. Herrera, who has been investigating these for a long time, working with MUFON and APRO, two of the leading organizations, working with Dr. J. Allen Hynek at the Center for UFO Studies in Phoenix. And if you have questions about it, or if you're a skeptic like Eve, who was on the line when we had to
abort
there for a moment. Eve, are you still with us?
Still here.
All right.
May I finish what I wanted to say? I was listening to your program for the first time, and I decided to call in and tell you my point of view because I listened to yours. I heard you speak of Ezekiel, and I've read Ezekiel, and I some of the things you say are true, but some of the things you, the way you interpret Ezekiel, I do not. Also, I do believe in angels, which in Genesis, they speak of angels. And they speak of angels coming down as men to visit Abraham, but not in plasmic or whatever you call this, microplasmic or whatever bodies.
No, if you get back to the etymology of the words, the etymology is the root study of words. And we've had Drs. Lee and Vivian Gladden on them many times. And the way those words that were used, particularly in the books that were written by Moses, which is the first five of the books, we're not speaking of some sort of mythical character, but actually
living beings.
A living human being.
But angels aren't living human beings.
Are a robot. And in many instances, there were robots, like the ones that were set up to guard the Garden of Eden with their laser beams and with their flashing lights and things. So you have to go a little bit deeper than the English that you're reading in the Bible and get it down into the root words of the original text as it came out, and you get a different view of it.
Excuse me, are you saying that the book that Moses wrote were written the way you just said they were? They were not described as human beings, but as...
Some of them were described as human
human-like.
Beings.
Human-like.
And human-like.
Human-like.
And some of them were described as...
Angels.
Or as the cherubs or as machines. In fact, the ones that they would fly around in were described.
Like the ones you're talking about in the UFOs? Anything similar to those?
I guess the descriptions aren't good enough to where we could say they were...
Well, in other words,
they were flying aircraft, yes.
What you're saying is you don't call them human-like. You don't call them at all human-like, do you? I mean, you haven't been calling them human-like. You were saying something about plasma,
yes,
microplasmic. Why I don't believe in this, because I know that there are angels, and it's written in Scripture that we are a little lower than the angel. We cannot see the angels, but the angels can see us. Also, I read Ezekiel.
Wait a minute, that's not true. You're not reading your Bible very carefully.
I read it over and over again.
Job and some others had many conversations with angels, and they saw them, and in fact wrestled with them on occasion.
Well, it depends on who's seeing them. I mean, it depends on God, who he wants to see the angels.
Well, you just said. See them. Now you certainly, we have too many references in the Bible where they did see them and talk to them.
But when you were giving the explanation that what Moses wrote, mm-hmm. I get the feeling that you're saying to me the angels that I speak of that came down in human form are not what Moses wrote. Am I correct? Am I correct in that assumption?
What Moses was talking about were human beings or robots.
They came in human form or in robot form.
Actually, there's a very, very solid wall of evidence that suggests that Moses was talking about human beings.
My last question is this. If these are... Oh, I also believe this. I believe there are UFOs, but not from different parts of the cosmos. I believe that our government's probably making and building, and it's secret, top secret stuff. I believe we can build UFOs just like we can these very sharp Air Force
planes. Well, what about
planes?
The UFOs that were depicted in ancient writings and in fact in the paintings of the Renaissance that you find all over Europe? Their UFOs were up there long before the United States government was in existence.
Well, that's an ancient writing, but you're saying the first writing we had was in 1947. If we were almost 2,000 years old...
We said that was the beginning of UFO discovery.
But, Bill, this
is
all...
everywhere.
Bill, it's almost 2,000 years, and if they only visited us in 1947, there's something wrong.
They
should have visited us sooner than that. That's why I'm a skeptic.
Eve, they've been visiting us all along. We were trying to... Now, listen carefully to what I say.
I am, especially if I can hear you.
They are depicted in ancient writings. They are depicted in ancient wood carvings. They are depicted in ancient paintings. Ancient being thousands of years ago, up to 100 years ago, and 200 years ago, 300 years ago, they are a part of the lore of every culture on this planet, whether it be the Aborigines of Australia or the ancient Chinese or whatever. They're everywhere through all the time periods that we know about. So it didn't just start in 1947.
Well, okay, but I still say I think they're angels, not the UFO people. I still think that they're the higher celestial bodies, higher than us. And
well, celestial in that they come from someplace other than Earth, but they must be human.
But they can come in human form, whatever the Lord wants them to come in. That's the way I believe. I just don't believe that other people.
You may be right.
Pardon?
You may be right.
I hope so. And I'd like to see one, really. I really would enjoy seeing one. But it's really funny because so many people see them, and I've traveled everywhere, and I never saw one so far, and I'm a senior citizen. And it's time to kick the bucket, for me.
Don't feel all by yourself, Eve. I haven't really seen one either.
No, but you walked on hot coals, didn't you?
I did do that. Yes, I did.
Yeah, by the way, I saw that on television the other night, in a television player, whatever it was.
Robin's hot coals or the skeptic's hot coals?
That was Tony Robbins' hot coals.
And hotter.
Well, thank you for listening anyway. Now I'll continue listening to you.
All right, Eve. Thank you for your input. I appreciate it. And let me see. We have Jim here. Hello, Jim.
Hi, gentlemen. I'd like to ask you about the animal mutilations. I recently spoke to a man who was displaced because of economic conditions who was formerly a farmer back east. I unfortunately don't remember the state. He told me that the terrain was quite flat, and obviously, visibility is good. He also stated that within his area, roughly 6 animals a year will disappear, and he stated that this has happened for like the past 15 years that he knows about. Nothing has ever been seen, and from the books that I read, it indicates that the carcasses are left behind. It does not appear to be a dissection as an individual who is interested in learning about the physiology or anatomy of another creature does, but instead they take specific unusual parts like sex organs, the anus,
the
eyeballs.
I've got some photos of it.
Yeah. Is there any kind of information that you can give me on animal mutilation?
Did you see the film Endangered Species?
No, I haven't.
That was filmed in Colorado, Logan County, and that's one area where they have the most sightings of UFOs, and they find a lot of mutilated cattle.
It does. It'll do very... In those mutilations, by the way, is a terrible word to use there. That's if the doctors at Cedars-Sinai could perform surgery like that, they would be delighted.
Selective dissection might be better than
that. They take out maybe just parts of the immune system, and or just certain parts of the nervous system go out, or they'll take out a heart without cutting the heart open.
The flap started in my hometown, the Snippy, the horse that was reportedly killed by UFO. They saw a UFO late one evening, and Snippy didn't come in. Next morning, they went out looking for him and found him. I guess his brain was missing, and
what's strange?
His neck.
Strange is that it seems to happen so often that you would think that the knowledge that they are looking for would be acquired, and that this would have stopped a long time ago. But it seems to be, at least according to this farmer, ongoing. And that's what seems unusual.
It continues. Last time I went to Colorado, the news reporter there told me that there had been a mutilation, but the sheriff wouldn't tell him where it was at or give him any information on it.
Yeah.
So it continues.
And there is a school of thought that this is a diversionary activity of the CIA to get your mind off of it. You hear all the black helicopters that sometime are associated with the mutilation of these animals, or should we say the surgical work on these animals.
These are supposed to be silent helicopters, and the quietest helicopter we have is the Hughes 500D, and it's still very noisy.
You can still hear it.
Yeah, well, this farmer had stated that nothing had ever been seen, neither have any kind of tracks except for those of the animals been found in the area where the carcasses were. He also stated that it tends to happen in wintertime, which seems kind of strange. You know, and here's an individual who told me he'd been a farmer all his life. Now, this is like Montana or something like that. You know, it's that far back east. It's not as close as Colorado. I don't remember the specific state, though. Could have been the Dakotas.
Oh, they happen all over the place.
Yeah. I'll give you another school of thought that a lot of serious attention is being given to about that. It has to do with mineral deposits, of all things. But mineral deposits have a way of working up into the soil, if it's down below, whether it is oil or whatever it is. And when an animal eats that grass, for instance, from there, there is a definite signature within the system of the animal, within its DNA, what it has been eating. And this is one way to literally keep track of the mineral deposits of the planet without covertly going out to Farmer Brown's field and saying, we want to, you know, put a sinkhole in here to see if there's any oil or whatever it may be underneath there, just by getting certain parts of the animal who has been eating the grass there that they can literally
cover the entire plant. That's right, Bill. Plants lease these minerals from soil, and many of them the plant has no use for, but
they could take the plants instead, instead of killing animals.
So some people say it is an activity of large corporations in conjunction with the government so that they can have a rather good look at just what our resources are without upsetting too many apple carts.
But no real breakthrough then has happened in so far as animal mutilations. I remember for a while that they were talking about satanic cults and things like that, so nobody really has actually seen a UFO.
Another theory says the government, you know, about the time the mutilations really started up, there was the outlawing of the testing of biological warfare, and maybe our government CIA is out testing toxins.
I've heard a lot about filing Freedom of Information Act requests, and something I wanted to ask you people is how to do it. Is it simply just type out a letter that starts out with the first paragraph, this is a Freedom of Information Act request? Should you have it notarized, or what procedure should be gone through?
It'll probably cost you nowadays. They're collecting for this copying of documents, and you have to be precise about what documents you want.
Yeah, you can't say, give me everything on UFOs. There is an indicator number of all kinds of numbers that you have to just tell them what you want. And the secret, of course, then, or let's put it the game then, is to find out exactly what those numbers are, those locator numbers, so that they can give it to you.
Once information is released, is it easy to go back and get it? I'm thinking in terms of the book Clear Intent, where they did a lot of Freedom of Information Act requests. If I was to write to the government and give these numbers but not state that I read it in the book, do you think I would get the exact same documentation?
That's a good source for you to go to is Larry Fawcett's book on how to do it. And you can certainly pull those numbers that Larry has given you in that book, and you can write Larry, and he'll give you some other good numbers that you can get some interesting things, and the same way with Bill Moore.
A while back, you mentioned that some of the crash-flying saucers, the technology was being incorporated into present-day aircraft. Do either of you guys think that the government actually has some sort of flying saucer craft, you know, although it must be quite primitive?
I don't know. Bill Moore specializes in that area. He's got an awful lot of information.
I think their interest has been more, rather than in airframe, but in propulsion systems, cloaking systems, and even weapon systems, navigational systems, and they have evidently learned some things from that. All right?
Yeah, thank you very much.
All right, Jim.
Bye-bye.
Appreciate your questions. Good ones on there. I'm Bill Jenkins. We're talking UFOs tonight with John D. Herrera.
Yes, I was wondering, what would be the procedure of the government if an individual was to walk into a restricted area that he shouldn't be in? What would the government do to this individual?
Well, I can give you one restricted area. If you were to go to Area 51, I believe it is, Nellis Air Force Base, the procedure is that you would be found about 200 miles away in a black bag.
Well,
and not live. If you'd gone too far into the restricted area. Otherwise, you'll be in a ditch somewhere in the black bag wondering how you're going to get out of it.
See, an individual related the story to me that he walked into a restricted area some time ago. And the story he gave me seemed like it could be possible. Supposedly, the CIA came after him in helicopters and this and that. And they kind of, like, threatened his life. They made him sign a contract that he would never divulge anything that he saw for the rest of his life. If so, he'd go to prison and he'd probably never make it there. Is that
place?
Yeah, when and where?
He asked me not to say, so.
Sounds like it was up in Nevada.
No, it was closer to Los Angeles.
All right.
So I was just wondering what the procedures would be. If that was so, then that's kind of messed up about the government.
I tell you what my procedure would be. I would do exactly what they said, because they mean it.
I would, too.
Right, they told him not to say anything, and he really didn't, but he just said a few things.
Well, there are some areas here in the West, certainly in Nevada and in California, where there is some very, very sensitive things going on.
Mm-hmm.
And the government really doesn't have any recourse about people who happen up on the area.
Yes, this was by accident. It wasn't deliberate.
It's kind of difficult to get into some of those areas by accident. You had to have done something that you knew you weren't supposed to be doing in the first place, because they are well fenced and there's a lot of warning. And if someone comes on anyway, they have to assume that you're coming on because you want to look at what's going on, and they don't want you to look.
Yeah.
And so they take that course of action. And it is so sensitive and so vital to national defense in many areas that they do not play games.
Is it possible that, like, say, this airline that was supposedly blown up by a terrorist bomb from going from Canada to India, I believe?
We don't know about that.
What? Could it? I understand that. But could it be possible that it could have been shot down by a UFO?
Anything is possible, but that doesn't sound like the activities of UFOs. Usually they are not offensive, except they get to be very defensive at times. If you attack them, you may get a little shot back at you.
What if one of our fighters was to chase one?
That's happened before,
yeah,
and they usually they lose that battle.
Right.
Yeah, could it be possible that they were to shoot one of our fighters down?
They have.
They have.
Not only ours, some of the Russian MiG fighters.
I think the Russians have learned that that's a losing battle also.
And this doesn't come out in the press.
Well, it did, yes. There was a NSA employee that divulged some of this information. He was at a listening post in Florida. And the Cubans detected a aircraft headed towards Cuba, and they scrambled a couple of Russian MiGs and tried to communicate with this object, and they wouldn't respond. So the orders came to shoot this thing down, and instead of shooting the UFO, one of the MiGs exploded suddenly.
Okay.
So this young fellow released this information to the news media, and he got in very serious trouble over it. The FBI came to his house and ordered him to put everything in a bag, and he wouldn't do it.
Oh. Okay. That's all I want to know.
Okay, Joe. Thank you
very much.
Thank you very much. And Larry, hello.
Hello, Mr. Jenkins?
Yes.
Yes, Mr. Herrera.
Yes.
Are you familiar with Trevor James Constable that wrote The Cosmic Pulse of Life?
Uh-huh.
What are your assessment of his pictures?
I take them seriously. There might be something that's, kind of hard for us to see that sneaks around that maybe plasma or something that's...
in other words, I had read the book, and he seems to be so sincere.
Yes, he is.
And has done so much research by himself with no help.
Right.
And I was wondering if there's been any other research done with the...
Yes, there's been others... duplicating some of these photographs. Trevor had constructed a cannon also to fire at some of these things, which I thought was rather dangerous.
Then you don't know that the it's been tried. They've tried to duplicate that type of photography.
Others have duplicated some of these photographs.
So.
Right.
And Mr. Jenkins.
Yes.
Have you come across, or do you know? Have you read The Morning of Magicians?
Why is that ringing a bell in my head?
Because I listen to your program, and I try to read all the books I can that you've come across. I've just come across this one in the last day or two.
That reveals a lot of the problems with scientists and their research.
Right. And you had the the gentleman on 2 weeks ago that was telling, 3 weeks ago, I guess it was, telling about the difficulty we're having with the scientific community.
Oh, yes, that was
accepting.
Dr. Centilli, Centilli.
Yes. Well, this Morning of the Magician is a marvelous book, and I can hardly put it down.
There's others just like it, too.
So you might pass that on. It's a great book to start with if you're getting into this area.
Yeah, we do have that problem within our academic community.
Oh, it's there.
Do not upset the apple cart, because you will be upsetting great grants and contracts and things like that. Don't give us a new idea, and don't advance our science.
Certainly.
Well, thank you very much for your program, and be sure and look this book up, The Morning of the Magicians.
All right, thank you
I'll
very
write
much.
I'll and I recommend it.
Okay, thank
All
you.
Right.
Thank you, Larry. I'm Bill Jenkins. It's Open Mind. The flying saucer, the UFO, or the alien beings in Earth space, whatever it is, and John is on the line. Hello, John.
Hi, Bill. I had personal contact, not with flying saucers, but with the Tatanka Canyon contact incidences, and I just thought I'd mention what I had and a little bit about the book.
Well, do.
I lived down, we still do, I guess, on the valley just west of Tatanka Canyon, and I guess it was in 52 or so. It was like a Saturday afternoon, and we're all the neighbors along the street were out doing like yard work and stuff. And one of the neighbors shouted, said to look up, and everybody looked up, and there were a V formation of seven discs that were, they looked like about the size of the moon looks, about that size. Very shiny and white in formation, seven of them, flying into Tatanka Canyon. And we saw them for a good 2 or 3 minutes. And they weren't going that fast, and it looked like they picked up speed as they went away from us. Couldn't tell exactly. The book then goes into talking about, and there was a lot of sightings around that time in the Southern California area, 52. And the book tells about people that lived closer into the canyon, actually got in their cars and tried to follow the saucers in farther into the canyon. And that a couple of people who lived way far into the canyon had these contacts late at night where they saw their whole houses would light up and stuff like that. And some people, I guess, in a hypnosis recalled being abducted by them. So it seems like it's a pretty significant case and well-documented. A lot of people saw them at that time, and people have speculated that there might have been some kind of base way back in the canyon.
Are you talking about Andrew Ruffles' book?
What?
Andrew Ruffles' book, Tatanka Canyon Contacts.
Right.
Yeah, that's a very interesting book.
So,
it's pretty well documented. A lot of people did see it, as you pointed out, and you saw them too, huh?
I saw them along with a bunch of neighbors, and
did anybody get any pictures?
No, it was somebody said look up, and we just watched them, you know, in amazement for a couple of minutes, and nobody saw, I guess, about.
Well, skeptics aren't going to understand that. They think that we should be walking around with cameras ready, and when something this amazing pops up, you automatically reach for your camera.
That was amazing, and, you know, so I've seen them, and I know they're there. There's no speculation about it.
If I had a camera, I couldn't have taken a picture of the one I saw. It just happened too quickly. And I wouldn't even thought of taking a picture. I was so stunned.
Yeah, you're amazed, and it's just an amazing sight. And, you know, you want, maybe they'll turn around and land or something. You don't know. Also, I went to my local college library and looked at the NASA books, the moon photos. And I sure thought I saw what looked like running across half a crater. I know what you talked about on one of your previous shows.
Mm-hmm.
A long metallic object, but very big, and it didn't look like a glitch in the photos or anything. And
there are some very, very strange things going on the moon.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll have to ask Dr. Krupp to explain some of those lights on the moon.
Oh, they're just natural little
TLPs.
Natural little lights. Edwin has trouble with all of those things.
He sure does.
And the pictures on of the face on Mars, he still has trouble with. He admits it looks like a face, but we don't have enough. We really won't know until we get up there and look at it firsthand, which is that's a good out.
I investigated a very good case down in Orange County. Before I got the information, they had called Griffith Observatory, and I guess talked to Dr. Krupp, and that was their second shock that he wouldn't take them seriously. First shock was seeing the UFO up close.
Yeah,
Dr. Krupp and other people, they spend most of the time denying.
That's the problem with some of these skeptics here.
Well, Well, I know
there
Edwin,
can't be
Edwin would like
then.
To believe, but he wants to see more data, let's put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing the matter with that. Good, hard data is quite necessary.
But if you show him the data, what does he do with it?
It depends on the quality of
He'll
it.
He'll throw it away.
As he addresses himself to it. I don't think he would. He's open-minded in many ways.
This just couple tried in vain to get him to listen to him.
Really?
They were...
What did they have anything
excited.
To show him? You know, any photographs or anything like that? Then it's, you know, it's... So what do you do with all of this information? It's not anything that you can hang your hat on and say, here is the empirical evidence that this exists, you see. And this is the way that
thinking goes.
That's
all we ever get. That's what we have to work with.
Yeah.
Do like I do. I learn a little about false sensory perceptions, hypnosis, everything else, psychology. Get a little background on all of that so I can interpret some of these reports and sort out the wheat from the chaff.
Much as possible. Well, John, I appreciate you getting in here and telling us about your sightings.
Okay.
Seven of them flying in formation into Tujunga Canyon.
Yeah, and people can find the book and...